There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Falb, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 527, September 22nd, 2011. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Google Ads. Google Ads get you the items that you desire. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, why did Kimi Raikkonen visit Williams? Alonso says he's going to win in Singapore, and Massa sure to stick around in Formula One for years to come. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi, who's freshly back from his tour of South America. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
We've got a race. We've got Singapore, 8 p.m. start time. It's going to be exciting, under the lights, and it's not one of my favorite tracks, but still,
it's exotic.
It's exotic. It's humid. It's warm. That's why it's going to be fun.
Maybe get some weather this year. I want to see some rain in Singapore.
We do want to see some rain in Singapore. I want to see some rain in Valencia as well.
Yeah, that's where I really would like, because that would make that track so much more interesting.
I concur. But still, this should be an interesting race. Of course, all eyes are on the young German, Sebastian Vettel, who could wrap it up this weekend. Hasn't had a kablamo, so a lot of things can happen.
Yeah.
But it's impossible, really, for him not to win this championship.
Yeah, it would be. He would pretty much have to stop racing this season. And
anything could happen.
Yeah, don't Steve, exactly.
Broken leg, one little in the...
Yeah. A shunt, kind of like what Robert Kubica had a couple of years back.
Yep.
Something like what happened in Monaco. You know,
miss a couple of races.
T-bone himself on an end barrier. Yeah, it's always a possibility that he could be injured during a race. He could be injured off the track, for all we know. You know, maybe he'll inadvertently drop a candy wrapper while he's in Singapore and be arrested and caned.
You mean like from a Clark bar?
Yeah, there you go.
I know what's going on around here. But it's going to be a great weekend. Of course, Fernando is all pumped up. He's always done well in Singapore. Won twice, 2008 and 2010, of course, for two different teams. And he expects to do well this weekend. He says, I have always managed to make the podium in three previous editions, and my objective is to make it 4 out of 4. A third victory to go with those of 2008 and last year would clearly be bravissimo and fantastico.
Yeah, he wants to be the Michael Schumacher in Singapore, who has won the race
exactly
18 billion times.
I think it's going to be fun. Of course, we've got one DRS zone, unlike Monza, where we had double DRS zones.
Double DRS.
So one DRS zone between turn 4 and 5, Stephen, and hopefully it'll spice it up, because one thing we know for sure, overtaking in Singapore is not an easy task.
No, definitely not an easy task. But it might be a little bit more, we might see more, because we kind of saw last season that when tires start to go, this track gets a little more interesting, because people have to fight a little harder. So the tire choices and the DRS zone should make things interesting.
I agree. Hans-Harald Frentzen will be our steward for the Singapore Grand Prix. And of course, I remember Hans.
Do you?
Yes. Don't forget, Schumacher married his old girlfriend. So Hans Harald Frentzen is going to be looking at Schumacher. Ooh, yes. Because we all know the blocking story is still...
No double moves for Schumacher in
Singapore. It's still in the news. I mean, he got slammed by a number of drivers who have columns like Mark Webber and other folk.
Grew up, he was racing. Come on. And he like did it twice. Give me a break.
Not only that, but he was trying to teach one of the young guys some moves.
Yeah, well, exactly. Teach Lewis how to do the double moves and not get penalized.
Exactly. But still, Hans Harald Frentzen will be watching him closely. And it will be whispered about Schumacher, blocking Schumacher. And, of course, Hans Harald Frentzen, we remember him for being at Sauber, Williams, Jordan, Prost, and, of course, Arrows from 94 to 2003. And speaking of Valencia, as I mentioned earlier, he was the steward at that race last year. So, fascinating stuff. And it continues. Of course, the rumor mill is really starting to grind up again because we only have six races to go. Vettel's got it pretty wrapped up. Felipe Massa not having a great year. Really not having
his second great year.
Correct. Ever since the accident, lots of talk around the garages that maybe he's out. And, of course, a lot of people are babbling about Jenson Button replacing him because he doesn't have a contract yet.
Flip-flop?
No flip.
Massa to McLaren and Button to Ferrari?
Wow, that would be great. There's nothing wrong
with
that.
I have a feeling, though, that Felipe Massa is going to be the new Rubinho. He's going to be the bad penny you just really can't get rid of.
No, I don't think so. Ferrari doesn't do that. I think he's on the move. I think Ferrari's going to put somebody young in there.
No, I'm saying... Felipe.
Oh, he'll be hanging around forever?
He'll go off to another team and he'll be there for 5 years.
Very possible. I could see him going back to Sauber eventually.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I could also see him at Williams for a year or two. You know, or even down a little further in the grid. To, you know.
Exactly. But Williams, a lot of people are... Virgin. A lot of people are saying there's the Felipe before and the Felipe after the Rubinho... Shock.
After the spring.
Yes. And of course, Rubinho, who felt really bad about that, loves his fellow Brazilian. But Massa is convinced that he'll be in Formula One for a very, very long time. A lot of talk about McLaren. They are whooping it up, of course. Red Bull signed contract with Renault. Christian Horner has come out saying, we're really the Renault works team, not those other guys. When you think about it, he's absolutely correct.
Well, that's what I'm sure that the top engineers for Renault are now working for Red Bull.
Of course. And they've signed a deal. They'll be working hand-in-hand developing the new 1.6-liter V6 turbocharged motor, which will debut in 2014, 2013?
2014, I think.
Yes, so that's going to be fun. And apparently... Mercedes and McLaren will still be holding hands. McLaren coming out saying we have a great relationship with the Mercedes Brixworth Performance Engines facility in England. And
better relationship than the guys that the Mercedes team has.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is how's Norbert Haug going to be handling this? You know, he's now at Mercedes Grand Prix. McLaren seems to be doing quite well with Mercedes, and yes. But Force India is doing pretty good too.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is right now McLaren's got a significantly better chassis. They've just had, you know, I think they actually have more resources to put towards development than Mercedes has had the past year or so.
I concur, and I think Mercedes has had a smaller budget for sure.
Exactly, and, you know, Braun's win... was really based on the fact that he was able to use Honda's money to develop that first car. And he found that loophole at the beginning of the season that allowed them to basically get out of the gate the quickest. Because if you looked at towards the end of the season, if it was one of those seasons where if they'd gone on for another 2-3 races, they may have been displaced because they just didn't have the kind of pace they had earlier in the year.
Right. McLaren says, the assumption that we're not working as closely with Mercedes is incorrect. We've had a long relationship with Mercedes-Benz. High-performance engines at Brixworth. We know the guys up there very well, and we're a good team together. I think certainly we expect, and we are working very closely with them to produce a fantastic 2014 motor. Our job, as theirs is to make sure Mercedes-Benz has the best motor on the grid and is the best prepared and most ready for 2014. So everybody's really focused on 2014. I would be focusing on 2012 and the championship.
Well, McLaren came out today and said that they are still focusing on the 2011 championship.
Exactly, which surprised me. I mean, there's nothing wrong. But see, they have the budget big enough to where I'm sure they're full tilt at the factory on the 2012 car. Come on.
Yeah, well, teams like Mercedes and or McLaren and Ferrari have really two development teams who swap back and forth. One works continuously on a car and basically works on that car for 2 years, where and then basically in the season the other guys are off developing next year's car.
Well, to be honest with you, I think McLaren is the closest competitor to Red Bull. Ferrari is doing a great job hanging in with the pair, but Ferrari obviously blatantly saying that they are already working on the 2012 car. No more updates for the 2011 car. We're just going to finish this season on a high. Of course, Fernando is always going to try to win.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's probably some development, because if you're developing next year's car, you're doing bits. So, frankly, even as you're developing this year's car, you're still working towards next year's car with this year's car.
Of course. I mean, that goes without saying, Stephen. This year's car becomes the development.
Basically the foundation.
Base. Yeah. Correct. So, good stuff there. I'm pumped up about it. And, of course, Team Lotus this weekend, they're trying to hang on to 10th position. In other words, in the Constructors' Championship. Because, you know, it's money, Steven.
Yes, it's money.
And they're introducing a new floor. Chief Technical Officer Mike Gascoigne, who I think, if they don't start picking up the pace, his job could be on the line.
Yeah, and I'm really surprised that anybody hired him after basically his running of Toyota into the ground with no results.
Well, not only that, zero results. And, I mean, he was flying back and forth from England to Cologne every week, which could be quite taxing, which is telling me, you know what, if you're super serious, spend your time in Cologne, get an apartment there, and focus.
Yeah. During the season, you should be at the factory.
Right. I agree. So we'll see what happens. Gascoigne did work pretty good with Jordan. He has...
Well, he pretty much made his name at Jordan, and that's why he's still employed.
I agree. But still, I think Tony Fernandez wants to get a little more serious, especially with the Renault power, the Renault transmission, probably Renault KERS next year. They want to see more results. They want to climb up the grid.
And that's another place that I'd like to see some fresh blood too, because you know we've got a couple of these guys who are, you know, 3-time retreads, and I know there's other talent out there for building up cars that really should be getting an opportunity.
Absolutely. So we'll see what's going to happen. Interesting stuff. We'll see if Buemi and Alguersuari will be there next year. You know, a lot of decisions are going to start coming down the pike, Stephen.
Yep.
It should be very interesting. And I'm hoping Force India, I'm hoping Paul DeRosa has a good race here. And because I'm rooting for him. I want to see him out-qualify Adrian Sutil.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the younger guns on the track. And he had such a great season in DTM last year. And he's pretty much been consistently improving. He's had a little bit of bad luck in a couple races, but he's been fun to watch.
Well, with the GP3 championship done, with the GP2 championship done, and some of the F3 championships done, with the World Series by Renault wrapping up, you've got a lot of young champions now looking for F1 seats. They have a lot of talent, and I'm sure Nasser will have some comments on that in this week's Motorsports Mondial.
Well, you know that over the next six races, you're going to see a lot of different Friday morning drivers.
Not only that, but, of course, we will have testing next year, which is going to spice it up a little bit.
Yay. Thank goodness. Because that's one of those things that I've disliked about it. It's just, it's kind of stagnated. It hasn't given the smaller teams an opportunity to improve much.
I agree.
They used to do a lot better at getting better. during the season when they could, you know, get out on a track with the car.
I agree. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message from Bell Auto Care.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with the king of Karachi, the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
Gracias, senor. Thank you. Hola and automobilismo regards. Back in Cali, back to reality. First of all, many thanks to all the people who made the trip a huge success and very enjoyable. So enjoyable that Mr. Rogers, that I'm planning my next trip to Southern Hemisphere late next year. I have some unfinished business there. The Tango and Samba party started on September 4th with a stopover in Sao Paulo on way to Buenos Aires, or as we call it here, Buenos Aires, via Montevideo. Have you ever been to Uruguay?
I've always wanted to go to Montevideo.
Yeah, they have a very
beautiful,
nice
port town. You know, just vintage, a lot of history.
Yes, and it's the birthplace of tango, and a very nice airport they have, small but very nice. And I got to fly on their national airline called Pluna.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, the Buenos Aires to Montevideo is a very short run, 30-40 minutes. But after I had made my plans, I found out that there's a high-speed ferry between Montevideo and Buenos Aires, and that's something I want to check it out next time I'm there.
Now, my question is, did you have the in-flight empanadas?
They're all coming up.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
So I'm jumping the gun again.
Absolutely. So, actually, that was the next line. I got to sample.
I'm so good.
Yeah, quite a few in-flight burritos and taquitos and empanadas and enchiladas, everything. And Mr. Leonardo Bartella, a proud member of F1 Weekly Familia, was at the airport. Actually, he was at both the Sao Paulo airports to greet me with his lovely girlfriend, Miss Haisa, who is from the state of Minas Gerais, which is also, she tells me, home to Pele and also Cristiano D'Amata. Surprise, surprise, our first stop, the whole Familia went to the Interlagos racing track. And I tell you, man, it was very emotional and something special to stand next to the Jose Carlos Pache statue at the entrance to the track. And, you know, he only won one race at that track, 75. Fittipaldi was second. Moa was 16 years old, but I remember the race very well. There was also a local motorcycle racing event going on. The first turn is steep downhill and very impressive. And there is not much runoff area to the right of the first turn. You know how the track goes down.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of your favorite IndyCar driver, Michael Andretti.
My friend.
Remember his big, huge crash with Gerhard Berger in 1993? That was a pretty vicious accident. Okay, after this, and per suggestion of Miss Haisa, we had some mighty fine Brazilian lunch with food from her home state. And we shall be posting some photos from Sao Paulo on the website in the next few days. So everything is in the works. Mr. Brazier has to be just a little bit more patient. Monday morning, September 5th, it was Buenos Dias, Buenos Aires. The first email I got when I checked in beautiful Hotel Aeropark was from my Argentine contact, Miss Juliana Anish, who is a Formula One journalist based in BSAS, as the natives call Buenos Aires. Probably they call it BSAASA or something like that. But it's pretty nice. She was the key to meeting Jose Froline Gonzalez, and I'm sure you know who that is. And the email said he just had a pacemaker replaced, and interview may or may not happen, and won't know till later in the week. So I was in a holding pattern. As luck would have it, he is in good health, and meeting him in downtown Buenos Aires on Friday was a great honor and a serious moment in motorsport history. I was deeply touched when he gave me a hug. And he's in very good shape, despite being 89 years old. Oh, absolutely. You know, I used to hear that he had a, and it's his, this, I used to hear that it was a, he owns a Chevrolet dealership. Actually, it's the Fiat and an Alfa Romeo dealership, which says Jose Froline Gonzalez. But I'm told he does not own it. His name is still there. But he has, next to it, he has an office. It's on Uruguay Street, talking of Uruguay, Uruguay Street in downtown Buenos Aires. And it was very, very nice to be there. And Miss Juliana was kind enough to do the translation. So this interview is in Spanglish, as we call it here. And we shall post this interview hopefully before the month is out. And she has also sent me a text version of it. And his assistant, Ruben, showed me a lot of pictures as per request of Jose Froline Gonzalez. And there is a picture, you know, that I had never seen. Maybe I have seen, but I don't recall. There was an Argentine driver, Onofre Merimon. He was killed in at Nürburgring. And Froline Gonzalez is being comforted by Fangio. And he sent me all those pictures. There's a picture of him shaking hands with your favorite, your other favorite, Schumacher. And when Schumacher won his last championship, he was telling me that he gave him the trophy or whatever the ceremony was. And there's a nice poster of it, and he signed it for me, Para mi amigo Nasser Rami. So that was very touchy, touchy, Rogers. Okay, and we have quite a few pictures. Well, for me, quite a few from Buenos Aires to Brasilia, and I was thinking of Mr. Brazier that he is really high on getting some pictures, so a few of them were taken specially for him. Tuesday, September 6th, I was playing email and phone tag with Mrs. Veronica Reutemann, hoping for an audience with Lole in his hometown of Santa Fe, which is about 200 miles north of Buenos Aires. And the thing about Argentina being such a big country, they don't have a very extensive transportation system for people by rail, but they have a very good, very extensive bus system, nice big buses. You can take a bus to anywhere in Latin America. Very impressive, and they have big bus depots for that. Anyway, in the evening I get a message that Carlos is not in Santa Fe, but he's in Buenos Aires and will come to my hotel for the interview. And you know, he was a governor of his province, Santa Fe, and now he's a senator. And they have elections coming up, I believe, next month. So I said, you know, this is not going to happen. This is just too good to be true. And, you know, since I was not staying at Ritz-Carlton, but definitely also not staying at Motel 5.5, I said to myself, I will believe it when I see it. So I sat in the lobby all morning, and lo and behold, Lole walks in at 3:30. First thing he says to me, ¿Cómo estás? So I can speak a little Spanish, so I said, you know, would you like to sit here or... And the what happened, they had some people coming and going, the TVs were on, so I had requested the hotel people to, if they could turn down the TV, so that there was less noise at that time in the restaurant area. So we sat there, and I asked him how much time we have. He says we have time, and he ordered a on-the-ground burrito. So I said, okay, this will work out fine. So it's a just over 1 hour long conversation. And you know, it's one of those things, you have to be very careful when you're talking to these people, how much you can push the envelope. But you know, halfway through I felt very comfortable, so I asked him what a question I always wanted to ask him about the not obeying the team orders in 1981 at Rio. And he answered, and it's a very interesting conversation about it. But you know, very nice and kind of an Argentine senator to come and see a home slice for an hour-long motorsport conversation. And you know, after the conversation, he says to me, I'm going to give you my home address, and I want you to send me a copy of this interview. And I said, sure, senor.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe a couple of calendars, too.
We can do that also. And you know, I'm going to go there next year if all goes well again. And hopefully, you know, maybe I'll get in touch with him. I have the phone number to the familia, Reutemann familia. So I'll probably, you know, see if we can get together for some
I see a round of golf coming up.
Golf, not for me. Maybe a trip to the Santa Fe racetrack, no problem. They have a lot of racing tracks in Argentina. Very, very, very impressive. And any questions you may have on this thing, on the Reutemann thing?
I'm looking forward to the interview. Any chance that the interview is coming up in a couple of weeks? You're going to let everybody sit on the edge of their chairs?
No. I send it out to Mr.
Our
executive producer, David Tapia. I'm meeting him tomorrow. Just, you know, a little editing. Yeah, because there was some noise and some stop and go. So we'll take care of it. But, you know, Carlos Reutemann, I believe he's now 69 years old. Good shape and a lot of fun going down memory lane with him. You know, he's a Grand Prix driver. He won 3 Formula One races in the U.S. and also won in places like Kyle Ami, Nürburgring, Österreichring. Very, very impressive. And, of course, thanks to him for his time, and also very special thanks to Senor Javier Naselli. He is also from Argentina, and Mr. Reutemann tells me from their same hometown, Santa Fe. He's now in New York working for an investment banking company. And I met him through Esteban Gutierrez, because he apparently is Esteban's banker. And I remember it was a couple of years ago he mentioned to me, if you ever want to talk to Reutemann, let me know. It was just like a passing comment. And then when I was serious, I sent him an email, and, you know, 1, 2, 3, uno, dos, tres, he took care of this. And also, you know, Miss Juliana, she was also the go-between and phone calls and all that. So thanks. It took a lot of people to get to these people, I'll tell you that. But, you know, all is well that ends well. And so this interview is coming soon to an iPod near you. We'll try to make it before the month is out. And since I was on a holding pattern to meet both Lole and Pampas Bull, because with Jose Fraulein Gonzalez, you know, his pacemaker thing, I really did not know till Wednesday evening whether I will be able to. And that was going to be a big, big letdown because of his age. I said, you know, if I miss out on this opportunity, then it's gone. You know, as it turns out, I was able to meet him, but I did pay the price of not going to Balcarce, which is the where the museum is for Juan Manuel Fangio, but it will be taken care of on the next trip. Okay, on September 11, I was back in Sao Paulo and watched the Italian Grand Prix with Leonardo and Miss Heiser. You know, this is like the second time I've watched a Formula One race with a member of the F1 Weekly Familia. Last time it was with Mr. Brazier, when Argens...
Our global family.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, he wanted me to see the Japan town in Sao Paulo, which we did. And there I was very surprised. There is this guy, Galvan Bueno. He's very well known in Portuguese-speaking world. He's a sports reporter, broadcaster, and he does the commentary for Formula One races in Brazil on Globo TV. And there was a street in his name, Galvan Bueno Street. So I took a picture with that street also. And, you know, I watched the race there, and of course he was commentating. So that was pretty interesting. Very surprising, given all the interest in motorsports in Brazil. They don't race was over and was pretty much done. They did not cover the interviews like they do here. So it was kind of a surprise. Monday morning, I flew to Brasilia, and the following day went to visit the racing shop at Brasilia Autodromo, which was previously known as Nelson Piquet Autodromo. And, you know, I had met Felipe Nasser with Mr. Brazier at Alton Park, and his uncle was there, Amir Nasser. He has brought a lot of drivers into racing because he has been involved in Formula Renault, Brazilian stock car racing, and one of the drivers that came through him was Elio Castro Neves. And Mr. Felipe Nasser has just won the British F3 Championship, so this is very good contact to have. And I was at the Brasilia track with him all day from basically 10 a.m. till 9 p.m. talking motor racing and a lot of inside stories about different Brazilian racing people, drivers, and a lot of, you know, it's always, there's a lot of information. There's more news behind the headlines that you never see, and that was quite an eye-opener.
Some of this off the record, on the record?
Some of it on the record, a lot of it off the record, but it was quite an eye-opener for me to hear this stuff that he was telling me. And not just about, you know, one particular series or one particular driver, all the things that it takes for a driver to succeed, you know. And, you know, the interesting thing he told me about Felipe Nasser, and, you know, he is hooked up with Steve Robertson, manager, who was manager to Steve Kimi Raikkonen. And, of course, you know, he was winning a lot of races, so there was a lot of interest from Gravity, Red Bull, this and that. And so I asked him, why did you guys go with Steve Robertson? What was he bringing? He said, well, his thing is he only takes one driver at a time. So if Steve Robertson is picking up a driver, and you know, Steve works with his dad, I believe that name is David, they really put all their eggs in one basket, and they do it after making sure the driver they are picking is like super, super talented. So let's just hope, you know, the kid goes all the way. And I did ask the, which is my job, the uncle, that, you know, hey, when the kid gets to F1, Moa would like to come to Brasilia and get a 15-20 minute interview. He said that'll be no problem. So I'm hoping to know at least 25% of the F1 grid in 2-3 years. Working very hard on that, as you know. Okay, and while I was at the track, I met a couple of young drivers who were testing with this team, took some photographs, and you know, one of the kids wanted to go to what used to be Formula BMW Asia, so he might go there very young. He was there, and Felipe Nasr's dad comes up to me and he says, oh, Felipe on the line, he wants to talk to you. So I talked to Felipe Nasr while I was at the Brasilia. He asked me if I'm having a good time in his town, and I said, oh yeah, such a good time that we are coming back. And you know, check this out, the hotel I was staying in Buenos Aires is a few minutes from Jorge Newbery Airport. They have two airports. The other one is Pistarini, which is the main international airport, a little bit outside the city. And Mr. Newbery was a gringo who was a senior figure in the early days of Argentine aviation. And right next to the hotel is a karting track. I went there a couple of times, met the owners. The lady spoke English, but not the husband. But I asked him if, you know, some, like, you remember Norberto Fontana who drove for Sauber? I said, does he ever come here? He said, well, he's from Arrecifes, which is the same town as Gonzalez's hometown. He said, but he lives here. So he, you know, he's talking to somebody in Spanish. Next thing, he gives me a phone number. He says, this is Norberto's phone number. Give him a call in half an hour. So I called a couple of times, left a few messages, but Fontana did not return my call. So he's on the schedule for the 2012 trip. He had a very impressive career in Europe against Ralf Schumacher and people of that era, but things just did not work out for him in F1, and he's now a regular in the Argentine touring car scene, which I am told is very popular and draws 30,000, 40,000 people all the time. And they, when I was at the Buenos Aires track, which is really spread out like Riverside, and the guy there gave me a run in unused portion of the track. There was some testing going on. They had these, what they call TC cars, touring carreteras. They make very nice racing noise. I was very impressed. So we shall see how it goes. And our favorite, who was also on the billing, but I could not get to him, was Jose Maria Lopez.
No, he was the big kahuna, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but you know, he almost made it to F1 with Ken Anderson, who almost made it to F1 with Peter Windsor. He had a race the weekend I was there, so I could not hook up with him. But I do have his phone number, and, you know. But people in Argentina, like people in America, you know, when you call, if they don't know the number, they don't answer. Every time I was calling these people, I was getting their voicemail. But that's okay. So that was a snapshot, a Kodak moment of the South American journey. And now shall we take a look at some racing action from Motorsports Mondial?
A little Mondial.
Did you enjoy the Formula One race, sir?
Absolutely. I mean, is there a Formula One race that we don't enjoy?
That's very true. Now, were you jumping and going bonkers when somebody took the lead at the start?
Yes,
I forget his name right
el
now.
El hombre muy macho de España.
There you go.
Sí, bravo, bravo, bravo.
Oh, yeah.
It was very exciting. That was a pretty good exciting start. Actually, I really enjoyed the Schumacher and Hamilton fight.
Oh, me too.
I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Nothing has changed as far as Schumacher is concerned. But it was very impressive. I liked it. Excusez-moi. Okay, Formula One, in less than 4 years of racing, Sebastian Vettel has scored 18 Grand Prix wins. That is amazing. More than people like Emerson Fittipaldi, who was two-time world champion, and Mario Andretti. And in a race or two, would have won two world championships. That's happening either in Singapore or, you know, the next race.
Japan,
there you go. Super, super impressive for a 24-year-old who was racing around Monza as late as 2008 in a Toro Rosso. That was a Toro Rosso in 2008, right?
Yes, sir.
When he almost ruined Hamilton's world championship. And that day was also historic as he became the youngest pole sitter and race winner. Nice move on Nando. The name has come back. Did you like the move he made on Nando over the grass?
Yeah, so that was outstanding.
Yeah.
Proving to everyone that he still is a race car driver, because a lot of people were claiming, you know, he's always leading, racing.
He can't pass.
Yeah, but that was very exciting.
But I, you know, if McLaren develops this car, but it gets, there's no such thing as two equal cars, but if that's competitive as the Red Bull, then I would love to see him go head to head with Lewis Hamilton and see who's got the meat and potatoes.
I think you've mentioned this before, but right now, Jenson Button is the leader at McLaren.
Well,
he's number two now. Didn't you hear?
No, he's not number two.
According to Jenson Button.
According to Jenson Button.
Yes, that's.
Or is that John Button?
I saw this on the BBC.
Yeah. Oh, good for him. But I think, you know, I was thinking this afternoon that maybe that McLaren will catch up to be as competitive as Red Bull when Vettel is already two-time champion. And that's when Hamilton really does well going against it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That will be good. No, we're looking forward to some good action. And what else we have here?
GP2,
as they call it in Brazil. Luca Filippi won the feature race on Saturday. Always good to win on home soil. Grosjean has already wrapped up the championship. Much was expected from ART drivers. Jules Bianchi, he was in his second year. He did finish third in the championship, same as last year. But I think he only had one victory, which was very, very disappointing for his caliber of driver. His teammate is Mexican Esteban Gutierrez. He did win a race in his rookie year, but found the going as tough as in F3 Euro Series after he went there from Formula BMW in 2008. But interestingly, I was reading on the GP2 series, you know, they had this e-magazine that Esteban was given the best move of the year for passing Romain Grosjean on the last corner in Hungary. Second-year drivers who should have done more included Sam Bird, Marcus Ericsson, and Fabio Laimer. And if you go on the Pastor Maldonado program or Pantano, that you're going to win the championship in your third or fourth year, then you have to make sure that your country has a lot of oil wells. Otherwise, it's sayonara. Well, what say you?
I think you're absolutely correct. Without Venezuela oil, Pastor Maldonado is not in Formula One.
Or, you know what these people should do? They should go and get Andreas Zuber was racing with Abu Dhabi UAE license, racing license. They should go to like Brunei, Nigeria.
All your favorite places.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Marcus Ericsson from Sweden getting a racing license from Biafra, Nigeria. I mean, that would be just so natural. But yeah, whatever it takes to get the job done, get to Formula One. And now I'm reading that poor Nico Hülkenberg, who was displaced by Maldonado, he's saying that his only chance now is Force India, and he won't know till December. And, that December is so late, if that Vijay Mallya says, you know, I'm taking Jarno Trulli in your place or whatever, then he is screwed. I still think, you know, the drivers who are in Formula 1, 22, 23 years old, who are very good Formula 1 material and just don't have a ride because they don't have a big checkbook, they should come here and race for Penske or Ganassi.
I agree. But also, you know, people like Jarno Trulli and Rubinho, they need to retire.
You know, Rubinho, I can say he brings a lot of experience.
20 years in Formula One?
Yeah.
He's the Mark Martin of Formula One.
Yeah. But, you know, Jarno Trulli, I mean, I am kind of disappointed, and people say I'm pushing the agenda, but that's fine. Everybody has an agenda. Lotus team, you know, they have Tony Fernandez, Alexander Rossi as a one of the development driver. They should really, you know, but put him in place of Trulli, or maybe give Trulli half the season, and because you need to have these people develop and get the experience and then, you know, try to do well. But I have a feeling that Mr. Ricciardo, I think he finally out-qualified Liuzzi, right? And I just have this feeling that Jean-Eric won. He is so out of control that I have a feeling that he will be in Formula One next year. And let's see what happens.
It's going to be exciting.
Yes. Talking of Rossi, we come to World Series by Renault at Paul Ricard. Local boy and out-of-control racer, the aforementioned Jean-Eric Vergne led from start to finish, from pole to win number 5 of the season. Carlin teammate Robert Wickens was second, and fellow ex-Red Bull racer Brendan Hartley was third. Brendan Hartley is hot and cold, hot and cold.
In race two, two Americans in top four, winning the race from the left coast, Alexander Rossi, second win of the season, I believe, for him. In position number four from the east coast, Jake Rosenzweig. In between, Daniel Ricciardo second and Jean-Eric Vergne third. And Ricciardo will not be taking part in the season finale, which is coming up because of clashing duties with Formula One. The championship will now be decided between two Carlin drivers. In Barcelona, Wickens has a 2-point lead over Jean-Eric Vergne. Formula Renault Euro Cup, also at Paul Ricard. Very pleased, I was very excited about this. Very pleased to report Robin Vriens from the Netherlands and driving for Josef Kaufmann Racing, our friends from Germany, both fast friends of F1 Weekly as we know by now, not only won the race but also wrapped up the championship. So in 3 years of motor racing, he has accomplished the following. Now you tell me, what do you think? 2009, Rookie of the Year in Formula BMW Europe, and that's Robin Vriens. 2010, Formula BMW Europe champion, 6 wins and 13 podiums from 16 races. And this year, Formula Renault Euro Cup champion, 5 wins and 9 podiums from 12 races. And you know, the best part is the last two championships, halfway through the season, it was like he was not going to win. The championship leader had a pretty good grip on the situation, but he has just like kept pushing and pushing and won both championships. Very impressive. The prize for winning the championship, I am told, is €500,000 for a seat in World Series by Renault. So hopefully we will see Robin Vriens hustling in to win 3 championships and 3 different series in 3 years. If he can pull that off, that will be the most amazing feat in many, many years. What do you think? 3 championship?
I think it's
3 different series.
It's impressive. It's Hulkenbergish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the future of Dutch motorsports is very good. Robin is only 20 years old. Congratulations to all the race and championship winners. MotoGP, are you ready for some MotoGP?
I am ready for some MotoGP. Ducati is not winning.
And Honda bikes had such a funky color, I was like, not good. Anyway, the Aragon Grand Prix in Viva España. Aragon is the place where Mr. Brazier and I were supposed to go.
That's the new track.
Yes.
Motorland.
Access was denied. But we live and learn. Win number 8 of the season for Casey Stoner on his Honda. His teammate and local hombre, Danny Pedrosa, was second. I was reading on some racing website today, and some guy, motorcycle fan, was really slamming Danny Pedrosa. That Danny Pedrosa is no good. He has a big Spanish sponsor. They always put him on best bikes, but he just cannot deliver. But everybody has his opinion. Another local yokel and defending world champion, Jorge Lorenzo, was third. Stoner leads the championship by 44 points with 4 rounds remaining. I am glad for Australian motorsports fan that he is making up for Weber's disappointing run in world championship this season. And talking of Weber, you know, I just had this thought. In 1972, Emerson Fittipaldi won the championship, and his teammate was Dave Walker from Australia. And I believe he did not even score a point. But I mean, he had just a very disappointing season. And I just hope that Weber does not make the history repeat itself, that Bastian wins 12 races and a championship and he goes winless. That will be very, very... And I just do not see Sebastian Vettel. He may be the nicest kid in the world, that he's going to pull over like Senna did for Berger in Japan 1 year and let Weber win a race. Do you think he'll do that? Probably. Yeah. He's not going to do that. And, you know, drivers should not do that. Okay. Indy cars at Motegi Road Course. Scott Dixon was the winner, and second place man Will Power now leads the championship. This road course was first time. It looked very nice, and this was the final race in Japan.
And how did Danica do?
Oh, it's, you know,
final year in
Indy.
I am glad
you mentioned. I was watching, I think it was Speed Report. Okay, that's the name of the program now. The first thing they mentioned was Danica Patrick started whatever position it was, 23rd, and where she finished, which was outside top 10. That's amazing. You don't win a race, you're not in the top 5, but you're the lead story. Well, what can you do?
It's called breasts. Okay?
Chicken breast?
The chicken breasts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before you get to your next one, Nash, I got a quick update. Mike Stater, a friend of our F1 Weekly staff,
of course,
says a quick note to let us know that the guys at Friendly Ghost Racing, also friends of F1 Weekly, won their first vintage SCCA race.
Mike, keep up the good work. And we always love Casper the Friendly Ghost.
There you go. Okay, finally some sad news. The Windy City robbed our family member, Dr. Mark Farrington, of enjoying the good opening round of the chase to the Cup. Very, very disappointing. The gentleman came all the way from Cambridge to Chicago. The rain-delayed race was won by Smoke, also known as Tony Stewart. The good doctor, this is the you know, the positive side of the negativity. The good doctor was able to sell his ticket at a deep discount and a free stake. I just hope he has high opinion of Avon sauce, the best a man can get on meat.
I'm sure they
Depending on where he was in Chicago, it was probably a really good steak.
Yes, yes, Chicago has some outstanding beef.
Yes. There you have it, another edition of Motorsports Mondial, medium rare, soft and tender.
Nass, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Why don't we just go right into the wrap-up, Stephen?
Sure.
Quickly, San Francisco Formula One group. Of course, they meet, eat, and drink. And this weekend, they'll be going at Go-Kart Racer. This, of course, is in Burlingame, California, right down the street from San Francisco International Airport.
That is true.
Great facility.
See it from the freeway.
Yep, you can see it from the freeway. Pre-race at 10 a.m., and the flag drops at 10:30. And, of course, they are at 1541 Adrian Road in beautiful downtown Burlingame, California.
Very visible from Highway 101.
Exactly, on the way to the airport. And now you see this, what, six, seven times a year?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay, Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, simply contact CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook, Twitter, MySpace. Just do a search for F1 Weekly, and that is, as a friend, and I went to MySpace recently, and it's still quite active out there in the MySpace world. Oh. And I noticed that Steve Faub has finally joined the Facebook familia.
Yes, it was drugged in, kicking and screaming.
I believe that. And of course, I can't forget Google Plus, Nass.
Well, I got a friend request from Mr. Faub and a racing driver, Axel Jeffries. He is from South Africa, which is kind of a surprise, pleasant surprise. And he hopefully will be racing in the U.S. in the Indy Lights. So I told him we'll send you some questions and we'll add another F1 Weekly friend to the world of motor racing.
Absolutely. The only problem, Greg Biffle still hasn't friended me.
Really?
Yeah. So that's the only disappointment on Facebook. Waiting for Greg to come into the fold.
What about Chad McCombie?
That's already done.
Oh, great.
Yeah, no problem. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to welcome Nass back to the United States of America.
Good to be back, sir.
I figured it would be. I saw the package of hot dogs in the fridge.
Yes, yes, and I'm trying to catch up on my Mongolian beef and my taquitos and jalapenos. These things are very important to me.
That's beautiful, Nass.
Only in America.
And don't forget, acclimate slowly. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.